Hi, I'm Carolyn, I'm the president, and next to me on the left I have
Marie
and Michelle.
Jeanette.
Okay, so we've recently, some of us have been to the South Australian Poetry Slam final, which was very, very interesting. It was a lovely drive into Goodwood.
And it was actually,
yeah. It was interesting all round, and it was lovely to be there with many, many, many poetry interested people.
And I think Marie, you summed it up beautifully when you sort of said there was just such a really lovely vibe to it that even if you'd gone by yourself, you would have felt like you were in a room full of friends. It was utterly delightful that so many people, I mean, it sold out, you know, obviously social distancing, as we were told on numerous occasions, was very important. Yeah, and it's nice to see a bit of an oldie win, a slam poetry competition, or I should
and
say
wearing,
a bit more...
And wearing high heels. She went beautifully well with her heels.
I know, that was fabulous, but there was such a excellent diverse range of topics and delivery.
And cultural diversity too was
absolutely
wonderful.
Absolutely, yeah. And then the slam poet at the end...
Daydream something. Magic. Daydream Magic.
Daydream Magic, I think.
He was totally awesome. What he could do with his voice.
It was great.
The poem, the sacrificial poem by Caroline Reed at the start was awesome.
Oh, she's wonderful.
I've heard her perform many times, and she's just got better and better and better.
It was a really lovely evening, and topped off by, of course, we had to go back to my place and have
and look,
wine
what time did
discuss.
I get home? I got home at 1:30
Did you really?
Oh, my gosh.
Go along and do something different.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good literature opportunities out there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Embrace them is probably what we want to
And to be part of the tribe is an awesome thing.
Yeah.
Because they're very different, but they're all wonderful.
Yeah.
If they're not wonderful, then, you know, they just don't get around to it. So that's some members of our group, not all of them, because not all of us are mad poets. Or
just
anyway.
Mad.
Yeah.
It helps, it helps, it helps.
I think we're all mad.
We're writers. We're writers.
And, of course, we're planning our next festival.
We
well,
are,
so
working very hard.
So that's all
with a theme of recovery. And we're all going to be in recovery mode by the time we get to that one. Recovery. And, you know, it can be anything. There's so many things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, moving on to literary news.
Literary news.
Notable birthdays for this month are Italia Calvino, Oscar Wilde, Ursula Le Guin, Sylvia Plath, Dylan Thomas, Evelyn Waugh, and James Boswell. In other news, poet Louise Gluck won the Nobel Prize for Literature, an American poet. And I've got a few more political stories. James Joyce House in Dublin, which was featured in his short story The Dead, is being developed as a hostel, and there's been a lot of protest about that. The Eritrean poet Emmanuel Azrat was named International Poet of Courage as part of the Penn Pinter Prize. Yang Heng Yuen, an Australian writer, has been charged with espionage in China, and he's been in prison without trial for almost 2 years now. One of the authors long-listed in the Booker Prize, Tsitsi Dangaremba, has been arrested in Zimbabwe in a protest along with other protesters against, I think it was government corruption. Her novel was The Memorable Body. So I thought that was worthy of mention, writers speaking out under attack by governments around the world. It's another sobering aspect of writing.
Mm.
Be brave, but be careful. I don't know. Yes. It's difficult. Mm.
So we'll move on then to poet and writer discussion. Family and friendship is the theme we're discussing this month.
Mm.
We're several months behind with this, but I don't care. We're just doing it at our own pace. We don't have to keep
pacing.
You
know what? With COVID, anything can
exactly. You can always use the COVID excuse. Blame it on COVID.
Yeah.
So family and friendship is this month's theme for us. And you want to start, Colin, reading the titles?
Okay. The first on the list is A Suitable Boy by Vikram Seth.
Ballet Shoes by Noel Streetfield.
Cloud Street by Tim Winton.
Cold Comfort Farm by Stella Gibbons.
I Capture the Castle by Dodie Smith.
Middlemarch by George Eliot.
Tales of the City by Armistead Maupin.
The Shipping News by E. Annie Prowell.
The Tenant of the Wildfell Hall by Anne Bronte.
The Witches by Roald Dahl.
I've read more of those than I have usually read. books.
Oh, you're good. I've read less of those than I usually read, which is interesting because family and friendship are my core values. So,
yes.
Isn't that
you just do it. You don't have to read because you do it. Oh. You are so it.
Thank
with
you,
your little
Carolyn. That makes me feel better.
Your little grandchild and your gorgeous son and your mother, which you told us about your mother today while we're talking here tonight. And family is you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I've watched adaptations of three that I haven't read on this. I've read four and watched adaptations of three more.
Which have you
wow.
read?
Tenant of Royal Hall, The Reaches, Middlemarch and The Shipping News, all of which I've got sitting here.
I've
so
read Cloud Street, which I liked, didn't like. Was cross about and then don't know.
Yeah, I wasn't. It was very interesting. We studied Cloud Street years ago in my book club.
Okay.
And
yep.
it really engendered a lot of debate.
Oh.
Yeah, because I actually wasn't a fan, although I completely admire Tim Winton. I just think he is an amazing writer. And then so it was quite interesting because three of my friends, it is their favourite book.
Okay.
Right.
And I was just kind of like, yeah, you know. And so I was almost excommunicated from the friendship groups. So to be honest, I like any book that kind of gets a bit of discussion going.
Mm.
But like I said, Tim Winton, amazing writer, but
mm.
Annie Prowl, The Shipping News.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
I
think
writing.
I've read it. I've got a feeling I've
love.
Read it, but it was ages
oh.
ago.
Her
it's
writing
set in
is fun just,
yeah,
oh.
yeah.
Her,
I love
yeah,
it.
Her
love
writing
it.
Is exquisite. It's like just wrapping yourself up in a beautiful blanket of exquisite language. She's really very, very, very good.
Yeah.
You know.
I do love Tenant of Welford Hall. Yeah, it's quite different. I suppose all the Brontes write differently. And I think Anne is the least sort of well-known.
Yeah, she's my least known.
Yeah.
Oh, well, and the brother. What's his name?
So, Granville Bronte.
Okay, yep.
I think that it kind of proves the point, though, doesn't it? You know, you're going to remember the females in the family, and then you're like, oh, heck, what was the brother's name, you know?
Well, he didn't achieve much. He was the underachiever of the family.
He was the producer of the wonderful writers, is what he achieved.
No, the brother.
The,
oh,
the brother.
Brother.
Yeah.
The
brother.
Oh, he was. He had
yeah,
issues
yeah.
with
yeah.
substance
yeah.
abuse, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had
big
issues
time.
With substance abuse. The father, I feel so sorry for him. He had, was it 6, 8 children? And outlived them all. To outlive so many
gee.
Children.
Oh, no, you don't want to do that.
No,
no.
no
never
no.
want to go before your kids.
He lived to old age. And the eldest of his children, Charlotte, died when she was, I think she was about 40 when she died.
Oh, really?
30. She was late 30s, I think. She was the long-lived one. The family, I mean, the Bronte story family almost eclipses their work. It is a fascinating and tragic story in itself, and they were amazing, these sisters from Yorkshire that fought to get their books published. A battle to get
had to change their names so that they didn't realize they were women
initially. Yes,
yeah,
yeah.
to start with. And we don't have to do
yeah.
that these days, ladies. We just go, I am
but
a woman,
you know,
hear me roar.
So many of the great novelists were women.
Yes,
it's wonderful. So, and of course, George Eliot,
yes,
same thing.
Yeah.
And George Eliot is also interesting, she was living with someone, she wasn't married, a really strong and controversial woman.
Good on
who
you.
Was well respected, despite all that, in her own time. So she's another, you know, interesting person in herself that challenged the sort of social conventions of her time.
Don't be
I do
afraid
like
to be different.
March. Absolutely adore that book.
Okay,
it's
I must
fantastic.
Read that one. Oh, so long book. I'm not, in this age of Twitter, I am really not good at reading long books these days.
I have to confess that's why I haven't read A Suitable Boy, because it is one of the longest novels ever written in the English language.
Okay.
And I really want to read it. And I've just watched the BBC TV adaptation of it, which is just beautiful.
Right.
Absolutely gorgeous. A Suitable Boy, Vikram Seth, Indian writer. It's set in the 50s, around the time of the first election in India,
right.
So it deals with, you know, independence is just new, India's coming to terms with itself, and it's about families, three different families. I really feel there's a bit of a War and Peace vibe to it. It's structurally got similarities. So at one stage there's a character at the train station and I immediately she's going to marry him because he reminds me of Pierre in War and Peace. Pierre character, and sure enough she marries him.
Ah.
It was like, oh wow, just so there are certain characters where, oh yes, this is very similar to.
But
it's totally different
that can be
story.
Comforting
I'm not saying
sometimes.
It's, Yeah, I'm not saying it's, you know, copying any
it's
way
not plagiarism happening there. She's
No.
No allegations there at all.
I did really enjoy the TV adaptation, so I definitely want to read the book. And it's been one I've wanted to read, but I sort of always thought, oh, I haven't got the time. I've watched the TV adaptation of Cold Comfort. I'm not saying it doesn't make me want to read the book. I enjoy
What's it about?
But I don't
even know what it's about.
I did read the book, and it was kind of interesting. And I guess I just saw how
comedy,
but just thinking of how different life was back in, I think it was the early 1930s to now. Like, you couldn't just try and do that story now. It wouldn't work at all because so much has changed in the way of, if both your parents die and you're an orphan and you're 20, well, you probably got a job, hopefully.
Yes.
And if not, will there be some sort of social security support, you know, and depends on your bill in your country and that too.
Plenty of money. Yeah, this is the moneyed class.
But the thing that was that for some reason she only had £100
a
year,
huge amount,
which
wasn't
a lot, you know. Yeah,
a lot of people would be living on a lot less, but it wasn't a lot to sustain that kind
that
she wanted to live.
Yes.
So she goes to stay with the relatives on Cold Comfort Farm. They're all completely eccentric and dysfunctional, and she is a bit of a Mary Sue character in that she fixes all their problems for them, which I find a little bit annoying.
Yeah.
I said it. I enjoy it, but not probably one I would. I loved the film of I Capture the Castle.
Yeah.
A beautiful film. They're going to live in this ruined castle. Their father thinks, you know, he'll be able to write his next great big novel and get over his writing block and his gothic ruined castle. It's a complete wreck. And unlike Cold Comfort Farm, it doesn't all resolve happily. You know, the father doesn't make money and get his book written.
Yeah.
It's not that happy, you know, everything works out well for them. They remain sort of the underdog family.
Capture the castle.
No. But it is a beautiful story. But at the same time, I'm not racing. If I saw the book, I'd buy it. Dodie Smith is better known for writing 101
Dalmatians.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. and you've probably seen the movie or the cartoon.
That was my niece's favourite book when she was little.
But I know of it.
Yeah, that was my niece's favourite story when she was little. And my brother knew it so off by heart that he tells the story about how he'd come off night shift. And he was lying in bed and she came up and she sat next to him and she said, Daddy, can you read 101 Dalmatians? And he was just like, because he's a delightful father. He's like, oh, yeah. And so he's asleep and he just knew it off by heart. So he just starts reading it. And then he'd hear the page turn. She was only about three, so she could read. Then he'd hear the page turn. And he was just like, and his partner was like, you got all the words wrong. He goes, I've read it 1,000 times.
Oh,
it was just delightful.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to see children's books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they are so significant. In fact, I put Enid Blyton down as one of my most significant books. Now I hate Enid Blyton, but that's what
You have to take the writer away from the books.
You do.
But when you're...
There's a lot of unpleasant...
Tree climbing.
Book,
Secret 7, Famous 5. That's
like
so much
Secret
fun.
7.
Famous 5 better?
I love the Famous 5.
Mm. Oh, it's like
the Fabulous Four, and she got the numbers.
She wrote a terrific treatment.
She probably did, Michelle.
I'm surprised. I'm here. Family and Friendship, which is my favourite comfort book, is Little Women.
Mm.
I mean, what a beautiful story about
too.
That is really the quintessential
Little
Women.
Oh yeah,
that's the quintessential family book.
Yes, and I think pretty much everybody has heard of it, at least.
And read it, and if you're female. And,
you know.
Seen the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you didn't write the list. Somebody else did.
I should write a letter of complaint.
But no, I do agree. For Family and Friendship, very strongly, it is about family and friendship.
Interesting.
I would say more well-known than Cold Comfort Farm.
Nope.
Oh, definitely.
By far.
And Ballet Shoes. Who's heard of Ballet Shoes?
Well, I had.
Oh, good on you.
Yeah.
Marie's the more cultured.
No, I've heard of it. And I reckon I might have read it like when I was a teenager or something, but I don't remember anything about it. It's just I looked at it and I thought, that sounds familiar.
So we'll move on. Writer's tip.
Writer's tip, what did you say, Michelle? Who said that?
It was detail.
Detail.
Detail. don't get bogged down in detail. I was talking with my son last night, who does a lot of creative writing. And
one of his sons,
he has
yep.
writing block. And we talked about the problem of getting bogged down in the detail. Mm. And I said, just
get
the
story out and
just
then
get the story
come back
in
to
more
it.
The detail. Yep.
Sometimes you don't need those details.
No, quite often you don't need the detail. And that can
and
just get
you,
in the way.
You've got lots of stuff in your head. It doesn't all have to be spewed
no.
out into the book. Just the bits that you know that are relevant will come
yes.
out.
Yeah.
Nobody
so.
Needs to know all of the details, but as
yes.
long as the writer knows them.
Yeah.
Going like back
yeah.
in time, authors were more likely to spend more time with the detail
yes.
and also with descriptions and things, you know.
I love descriptive writing.
Mm.
Oh, I don't. It's not very modern.
No.
So I know exactly what you're saying. Like, it was lovely, but it's not.
But then
it's
again,
not modern.
No.
At all.
People still love reading old books like George Eliot Middlemarch. People have been going back and reading a lot more old novels since COVID. So people don't just want to read what's modern. I actually love descriptive writing.
Mm.
So I think it's taste. And
yeah.
So I think you read it as a classic, whereas it wouldn't, like something like, you know, Middlemarch wouldn't get published now.
No.
It's not indicative of the writing style of our times. Which doesn't, Lord of the Rings continues to be hugely popular sort of thing, but it's not something that would get necessarily
so
written now.
So I think
that's
the problem with publishing, though, is that they are deciding what people want to read, when if you actually look at what people are reading, it's way beyond those narrow strictures of modern publishing. So I think they're not making allowance for actually people love reading different styles of writing.
Are the books being bought because of the back room? People say, you buy that one, you'll sell lots of them, buy that one, we can afford to buy that one. But the actual editors and the people wanting to do these books have other books they'd rather be doing? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I still think it's driven by taste. I mean,
the point of all of that discussion. Well, what was the tip again? Repeat the tip.
The detail.
Details.
Yeah. Get down in detail. Don't get bogged down in the detail.
Yeah, as we may have done just then. don't do that. As we showed with our talking afterwards.
I just think that there's a wide range of tastes.
Exactly.
And what appeals to one person won't to another. It's like, I remember many years ago when I went to see Picnic at Hanging Rock and in intermission out in the ladies, some of the ladies were going, oh, it's so slow. And I'm thinking, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
That's
the
way the atmosphere is being built up.
Yes.
But they were frustrated by it. They wanted things to be happening and moving on. And some people are like that. And other people like something slower and how it builds up and it's got that atmosphere and got you wondering, what's happening?
So if you feel like something needs a lot of detail, actually consider different ways that you can appeal to people's, interest.
Would be how it changes other people's perception of that character and how that character feels rearing it. But we should move on.
Okay.
Because we're bogged down in the details.
That was a long 1 minute.
Yes.
Word of the day.
Flimp.
Flib.
Flimp. F-L-I-M-P.
Right.
Flimp.
And I was particularly attracted to this word because it's one I'm going to use in my current writing. It's British slang. It's a transitive verb. Means to rob.
Ooh.
Generally with the aid of a second person who provides a distraction.
Ah.
So it's called flimp. So it's street slang.
Old
British slang. So
I
like that.
Flip me, Garvey. Flip me. Flip me.
So we'll move on to readings of own works.
Okie dokie. I'm going to read from my poetry collection, Tense and Still. I'm just going to read a few of my haiku. So, haiku. I'll read three haiku. Quite different ones. A gentle spring breeze. Front yard shared with birds and motorbike roar. Cricket season. Seagulls and people all flock to Adelaide Oval.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
And the next one, the last one, hanging out washing. Sparrow near me holds a strand of blue in her beak.
It's really lovely.
That's lovely.
Mm.
I don't know what article of clothing that blue strand of cotton came from, but it was...
Hopefully it wasn't your underpants or something. You find out. So tragically,
those blue knickers that came falling all down.
Those blue knickers.
So
anyway,
that bit of blue thread could have ended up in a nest. And in fact,
today
my sister and I saw a bird's nest on the ground and it had blue thread.
Whatever they can find, they'll use it.
Yes.
And these bits of material, threads and things, help to keep it warm.
Lovely.
Your turn.
My poem's quite different. It's called My Father. Seen through the eyes of a young child, he could do no wrong. As we shared a special day out, catching the train, travelling on Popeye, visiting his friends, and eating prawns and drinking pink lemonade. Seen through the eyes of a teenager, he could do nothing right, as we shared no common ground, and he criticised my friends, disliked my clothes and music, and failed to understand me. Seen through the eyes of an adult, he was neither right nor wrong, just doing the best he could, at the time, under the circumstances. Just as I do now that I am a parent myself.
Mm. Nice.
Mm. Yeah, that's really,
that's
really good.
Very true. Mm. Our fathers are heroes, and then they're the most dreary, boring things in the world, and then you go, yeah, it was bloody hard, wasn't it?
Mm.
Have you got something to read out?
I'm showing him a job application. No.
Next time.
So this is the beginning of the book I intend to write of my family
history.
The tradition was that happy stories ended with marriage, tragedies with death. This story ends with marriage. It is not a happy ending. Narrative threads weave together and then spill out again, tangling with other threads, resembling a tree with roots and branches. The starting point is arbitrary, but there is one determining factor, information. The basis of most of the story, or collection of stories, is old history, family legacies, memories passed down from generation to generation, supported by records which only go back so far and lose interest once they can no longer be dressed out with stories. Ours is an anecdote-rich history, short on actual facts, so this tangled history begins with a story that may or may not be true. It starts with a woman who was born in the north of Cumberland, now Cumbria, so close to the border that she could stand with one foot in Scotland and one foot in England. Just who this woman was, if indeed there was such a woman, it's impossible to be certain. The story was told by Tom Gilhooly, and it referred to a grandmother who might have been his grandmother or his grandmother's grandmother or his grandfather's grandmother. Tom's grandmother, Jane Craighill, was born in Cumbria at Warwick Bridge, just to the west of Carlisle, and about 25 kilometres from the Scottish border, hardly close enough to be able to straddle that imaginary line. Jane was born on the 13th of June, 1831. It was a Saturday in summer, though summer in Cumberland is a rather arbitrary concept. It might well have been raining with a bone-chilling wind driving down the Mercury. Her father was a dyer by profession. There was a cotton mill in Warwick Bridge connected to the nascent cotton mills of Carlisle, the regional capital, which was rapidly developing into an industrial centre with one of the largest mills in Britain. Jane's parents would have been caught up in the transition from cottage industry to factory industry. They were fortunate, however, to be living in Warwick Bridge and not Carlisle, which suffered from an acute housing crisis during the Industrial Revolution. Though we know little of Jane's childhood, it is clear that she did receive basic education. She had literary skills. She would have had little access to information or books other than the Bible. Like most working class daughters, Jane would have started working by the age of 14 and most likely younger. When she was 19, she worked as a house servant. There are surviving photos of Jane, but none taken when she was young. We can, however, picture her as a young woman, short, maybe not much over 5 foot, brisk, moving with a rounded face, heavy cheeks, largish nose and sharp eyes. Her hair was thin and dark, moulded around a high forehead, giving her a slightly masculine look in later years. In one image of her, there was a barely suppressed smile, not a common feature of 18th century portraiture. This is clearly a woman with a keen sense of humour who found it difficult to keep a straight face for the camera.
Hmm. Yes.
You've shown an interesting person.
Yeah.
Someone wants to know more
about
her.
Yeah. And there's that hint that, Yes, that she's got a sense of humour. And
we'll move on. We're almost to the end of this podcast, and we're up to the listeners' challenge. And this is one Shell is very keen on.
I love this.
It's the hand at Pioneer Park. The beautiful hand.
The beautiful hand, which we are extraordinarily lucky to have.
It's a statue. It's the most beautiful thing. Shiny, bright thing.
It's wonderful. It's lovely public art.
And so, it's caused much comment.
Yes. Which all good art should. Mm.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
So we should use this as a writing prompt, and then we'll be able to put stuff up on our wonderful new website. So we'll wrap it up there.
Okay, thank you.
What are we discussing next month? I think it's...
crime.
Yeah.
Oh. Fabulous. Not my genre at all. Although I've actually read quite a few books on that list. But
it's well, this will be Carolyn's specialty with her cozy murder mysteries.
I've read a gazillion Agatha Christie novels when I was young.
Me too.
And now I'm attempting to write a cozy murder mystery, which is the first of a long series.
Well,
I've got to get the right one done first.
Book about a thief, so.
Oh, there you go.
It's featured a lot in my comic books.
Fabulous. Right. So, we'll see you next month.
Yes. Next month.
Yeah. Thank you.